Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. And now, during our Veterans Day sale, save 40% on the Sleep Number Special Edition smart bed. Plus, free home delivery with any base. Ends Monday. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, welcome to episode 392 of the Find Your Food Voice podcast. I am Julie Duffy Dillon, your host and registered dietitian. Today, when this episode is going to be dropping, is officially Election Day in the United States. So I want to tell you, I hope you're taking care of yourself. I was lucky enough to vote early. I didn't want to risk it. I wanted to make sure my vote got counted. And today I am setting aside some time with some caring neighbors to watch the results come in. And I am praying so hard that my state flips blue. So we will see. I know it's going to take some time before we even know, but just want to send lots of support and caring vibes your way. So this episode is one where I want to start off by asking you to picture someone with diabetes. What do they look like? What assumptions do you make? You've been misled about what actually causes diabetes, and that has led so many people to feel afraid. And when we make behavior changes based on fear, they aren't sustainable. I've witnessed this over and over again over the last 25 years. So I hope today's episode, which features a letter from someone who has feared getting diabetes and changed their eating because of it. This person happens to be a dietitian who has repaired her complicated history with food and was willing to write her own letter to food about her fear of diabetes. This dietitian's name is Gina Forster, and she's been a dietitian for over 20 years and has experience as a supermarket dietitian, a university dietitian, and now is following her passion as an intuitive eating counselor. She helps people improve their relationship with food and their body without a focus on weight. When not working with clients, Gina hosts the podcast Nutrition Unmeasured, and I'm super grateful that I was able to be a guest on her podcast discussing particular diets and PCOS. So definitely check that out if that's something that sounds interesting to you. But something I want to say about this podcast in particular is as I was listening to Gina record her letter to food and like reading through it, I just really appreciate that experience of writing a specific letter to food about your struggles with eating and body image. I just think there's so much healing and transformation that can come and being able to write this down. For many people, this is something that they'll just keep to themselves. But so many of you have submitted letters over the last, gosh, it's been almost 9 years of this podcast. Every chapter of the Find Your Food Voice book includes a letter to food and a way for you to do your own exercise to help you digest the information that I share in that chapter. As you'll hear in this episode, Gina then talks about her letter and what she went through writing it and how she would like to move forward. And hearing her experiences going through her letter, reading it out loud, and then discussing it with me, I want to invite you to do the same. If you're interested in writing your own letter and then also joining me on the show, let me know. You can send us an email at info@juliedillonrd.com. You can also submit it on our website at julieduffydillon.com. So with that all being said, I want to mention one more thing that's kind of like a housekeeping, and it has to do with the ads on the Find Your Food Voice podcast. I have gotten emails from two people, and I am so grateful for this information because the way that I'm able to support the podcast financially with all the software and editing and just the folks that help to make it happen is through these ads. And so I can't remove them or I won't be able to have the show anymore. And the ads are tailored to you. And so the ads that I hear when I listen to my own show, yes, I do listen to my own show. I need to, right? So when I listen to my show and other people's shows, the ads are targeted to me. And when you listen to it, you get different ads. And there have been two people who've let me know that they've gotten very diety, food shaming, weight focus ads. And so I have settings in my dynamic ads like program to help avoid this, but obviously it's not working. So I went in and just put in more. And I want to encourage you to skip the ads as much as you need in order to consume this content. But if you would rather not have any ads, there's a couple different avenues. There is a tip jar that if enough people contribute, I don't have to do ads anymore. And that's in the show notes. But you could also watch the podcast without these ads on my YouTube channel, because everything I'm recording here now, if you're listening as a podcast, I go ahead and just throw it on YouTube as well. So you can actually just watch it. And there are no ads that are being put in dynamically. Of course, YouTube can have their own ads. I can't control that, but there won't be ones inserted by the same company that hosts my podcast feed. So with that being said, we are going to have a quick sponsor break. And after that sponsor break, and again, proceed with caution, you will hear Gina as she shares her letter to food.
I never knew you could treat depression symptoms from your phone, but with this prescription app called Rejoin, it's possible. It's for adults age 22 and up with major depressive disorder who want to add to their antidepressant medication. And get this. It's the first and only prescription app authorized by the FDA to treat depression symptoms. Rejoin does not replace your current medication. Be sure to use as directed by your healthcare provider. And if your depression symptoms worsen, seek help immediately. Get started today by talking to your healthcare provider or visiting meetrejoin.com. That's meetrejoin.com.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. And now during our Veterans Day sale, save 40% on the Sleep Number Special Edition smart bed, plus free home delivery with any base. Ends Monday. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
Dear food, I've always loved you. Even those 10 years I feared you, I still loved you. Growing up, I didn't think twice about you. I ate when I was hungry, stopped when I was full, never overthought my decisions about you, wasn't guilted into eating certain types or amounts of you, eating less or more of you. We were good. Something changed around high school. My body was changing, yes. My stress changed too, and my thoughts about myself definitely changed. I'm sure it was a combination of external factors like TV shows and subtle messages about food in my body, but also having a mother who was constantly, quote unquote, trying to lose 10 pounds. So many things came together to make me, what seemed like overnight, fear you. I started weighing and measuring you like it was my job to limit you and only have so much of you. I became obsessed with not eating anything with fat, feasting mainly on egg whites, broccoli, cereal with skim milk, and rice cakes. I pretended I was completely satisfied, but the truth was I wasn't. This disorder carried me through my best years, college, where things got worse, but I believed I was fine. Saying my eating was completely normal, my relationship with you was fine, and I was indeed eating plenty. I truly believed that was true. At a certain point, I couldn't restrict you any longer. I needed more. I started binging on types of you like peanut butter, my favorite food that I never allowed myself to eat. I felt out of control, but fixed things by overexercising, thinking there was no way I could allow moments of weakness to change me or change my body. I'd go to the rec, where I went to college, for hours, I'd study for exams while pedaling on the recumbent bike, never leaving until I burned a certain amount of calories and repented appropriately for what I considered a sin. Fast forward to now, 20 years later, and I have trouble even remembering my life as someone who feared you. Instead of fearing you and fearing hunger, I embrace it. I'm raising a daughter now and can't help but wonder, how will our culture shape her relationship with food and her body? She's already begun making comments about her body, and I feel blessed to have the skills to help her through these moments. But what if that's not enough? What if social media, movies, TV shows, her friends, their families, what if somehow her relationship with you shifts almost overnight like it did with me? I can't and I won't live in fear. I know I can only do so much. I know what I'm doing now, raising her in a house where I and her father love and appreciate you, food, and don't comment on her food or our bodies. I know this is helpful. It may not be enough, but I can and always say that I did my best. Food, I just want to say that even though we had a rough 10 years, I thank you now for nourishing me, bringing me so much joy and satisfaction, helping me grow two beautiful kids, and of course, thanks for nourishing them now. I hope they can always look at you with love and not fear. Your friend and admirer, Gina.
Hey, Gina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Julie. I'm so glad to be here.
Thank you so much for that letter and hearing you read it, you know, because I got to read it before, but like hearing you actually read it, it packed a punch. And I'm curious, what was it like for you to write it?
Okay, so I've written a lot. I actually did a whole episode on my podcast about my eating disorder and like went through the whole, I called it a journal entry. It was very cathartic. Nice. I mean, it was, and then reading that out loud, it was actually kind of difficult. It brought some tears to my eyes. But so writing this was, I would say, a little easier, but also some more things came up because I was talking about my daughter. And I've in particular had some hard times with her as of lately. She just started fourth grade, and this has been by far the most difficult year with her. So the writing the letter was good. I mean, it's just like any journal. I don't journal, but when I write things like this, I start to think maybe I should because it feels good.
Yeah. There's some kind of, we go through our own process, right? By reading, like making, like, I know for me, it allows me to have more clarity on like the direction I want to go. Like, and no one can tell us that, right? Like, it's only things that we can really, we can only design that for ourselves. But
right.
You know, the big thing I got from reading your letter is like that theme of fear. You know, you describe this like, well, before the fear hit, like things felt fine, like, and kind of like there was no thinking about food. It was just like a great thing, right? And then when the fear hit, just like all these different ways of experiencing food and being so scared of it that it, like it even kept you from enjoying how like college can be a really great time, you know, and like getting in the way of that, which I'm like, oh, I hate that. And I don't know if you do this with your clients, but when my clients are, when I worked with people who are like high school age and they were getting ready for school, and I was like, you cannot go to college until you can eat pizza. Because if you like, I don't want you to like not go to a social event because there's pizza there, because that's where you're going to like meet people and like get to know yourself more. And I know that's like a random thing, but like, yeah, any common social food, like let's make sure that it's not going to be something that's like stealing the show. But yeah, anyway, but yeah, back to the fear, like how that was woven through so much. And then now it's not necessarily the fear that you're having with food, but the fear with your own children. What's the fear that you have with your kids and food?
Well, of course, as someone who has had an eating disorder, I know it is genetic. There's a genetic component, right?
Of course.
So, of course, with my daughter, who's already overanalyzing her body, I live in fear that she's going to develop an eating disorder. It's just, I don't know how not to have that fear. We are actually very different people, which is funny. I think about my daughter and we are I don't want to say polar opposites, but we in many ways are. So sometimes I'm like, yes, that's a good thing. We're very different. So maybe she'll be okay. And yeah, I don't know. I've tried really hard. You know, even if I didn't have an eating disorder, I think I would have tried really hard to raise kids who are body positive and food positive for various reasons, but especially I have in the back of my mind, I just want to protect her. But yeah, like you said, for me, it happened. I feel like it happened overnight. Now, granted, if I were to be back there, I'm sure it was not overnight. I'm sure it was a slow development. But to me, I feel like it was just, I went from not fearing food, not ever thinking about food other than just for satisfaction, to all of a sudden measuring my food, restricting fat in particular, because this was the early 2000s, and fearing it. So sometimes I'm like, when is this going to happen with my daughter? I don't. And as I'm talking about this out loud, I really don't live in that fear every day. I'm not constantly thinking about this, but it does come to mind when she says certain things. You know, I'm working with a therapist. We will say that.
As we all should, right?
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense, like, why you're guarded. You know, you have this lived experience and you, like, knowledge is power, but also, like, it could be our kryptonite, because we do know, like, there's a genetic side to eating disorders, just like there is with, like, diabetes. And so you know what that looks like. And then also, as a dietitian, like, appreciating, like, our current climate is, like, just like the preparation for an eating disorder. Like, it's the trigger for so many people. And I can remember a therapist once describing, actually, this may have been a medical doctor, but whatever, it doesn't matter. describing, like, the continuum of incidence of eating disorders based on genetics. And they were like, yeah, for some people, their genetic predisposition is just so high that no matter what a caregiver does, they're probably going to have an eating disorder. And then, but that's not the most common, but you know, there's some that's just going to happen. Like, we can only prepare so much because this world is shit, you know, especially as to how it relates to food. Yeah. And so, but then for so many others, we can just lay a foundation. And I say that as, like, kind of mom to mom, like, that's what I know that whenever I have feared, whenever I hear my kids parroting, especially when they were younger, like under 10, and parroting what they heard other people at school or teachers saying about food, I would try to remind myself, like, okay, I'm hoping I laid a foundation where it's going to be preventative, but yeah, I guess we're only humans doing the best we can, right?
Right. And that's the thing. We can't protect, like, I'll do any, I mean, I'm not perfect. I'm sure I've said things that I should not have said in front of my kids, or, you know, force them to eat certain foods. I mean, of course we are human.
Right.
But I'm trying to lay that foundation, like you said, a foundation that I don't think I could have had. It was so close I actually had a really good relationship with food, but I was, tainted by my mom's relationship with her body, which I guess also her relationship with food, which I, looking back now, I mean, they definitely were intertwined. But we can't protect our kids from what they hear from other people. I've had a couple instances, both with family members, of things like this one person said that the reason why she doesn't eat sugar when my daughter asked her this is because it makes you fat. And I was in the room, and Julie, it almost brings tears to my eyes, because it is just one comment like that can get stuck in a child's mind forever. Like, I don't know that she'll ever forget that. And then this was recently, so I would go into what I did. I handled the situation. Needless to say, that person will never be saying that again. And then I had to have a nice conversation with my daughter about that. Yeah. But then I recently had another situation where someone commented on my daughter's belly, which is so inappropriate.
Boundary crossed for sure.
Right. And she didn't even recognize, I think, that what the person had said. And then, like, later she said to me, and I was like, oh, like, I thought that she just didn't even, it just kind of, like, went over her head. But then she brought it up to me later, and I'm like, gosh, she did. Because she's like, Mom, what did he mean by, and, you know, why do people do this? It's just, I can't, that's where I get, like, again, I know I don't have total control. And for me, that's really hard, which is probably why I was predisposed to an eating disorder. Part of the reason, you know?
So something that I think is really great is that your daughter knew to come talk to you about this. Yeah. I think for a lot of us who, I mean, I don't know, like as a Gen Xer, like we didn't talk about feelings. That was just not something that was talked about. And if it was, it was kind of a weakness culturally to do that. No one talked about going to therapy, you know, things like that. And so now hearing your daughter like went to you to ask, like, that shows me there's like open communication, there's discussions about bodies. And I don't know what you think about this, but I put so much of my like, okay, this has to be the foundation and it has to be enough because I can't live in fear, like you said in your letter. Like you just can't keep doing that. But like teaching my kids two things, like how to not diet and then how size diversity is this beautiful, wonderful, natural thing. And like that comment about sugar makes us fat, like how that is like a double whammy because it's teaching your child, which I have no idea your daughter's body size, but it's teaching your child that like certain bodies are more valuable and that we should cut out pleasurable things to make sure we don't get to that point, you know? Mm-hmm. And then also, yeah, that this food has, by manipulating this food, by denying yourself it, you will stay valuable. Like, ooh.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually glad you said that because that is something that I have also worked on. So when this person had commented on how her belly is bigger, I made it very clear. I'm not going to come up to her. Maybe old me would have been like, oh no, Paige, your belly is fine. Look at it. It's, you know, it is actually flat. I don't know. But instead I recognized that I don't want her to think that what that person said was bad and that having a bigger belly is bad. What I want her to see in that comment is the harm in just commenting on someone's body, period.
Yeah. It's not appropriate for someone to be talking about your body. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just not, it's not an interesting topic or even necessary to bring up, you know, like it's just not.
Yeah.
So yes, I did not. And just like, if anyone ever, no one's ever done this, but if anyone ever said, you know, you're fat, I would not approach it like, no, you're not fat. And maybe in the past I would have, but
of course, I see the harm in that learned. Now. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Same that here. Is just demonizing fatness. And we don't want to send that message. So yeah, I totally agree with you, Julie.
Yeah, I the thing I'm clinging to is like how I'm hoping that's protective, you know, for our kids. And also to like help make it a better world for the next generation then. If more people are brought up like with this just thought in their head that size diversity is this normal, natural, kick-ass part of being a human being, then we don't have to worry about debating whether or not a certain food is good or bad. Like maybe a food, if you have some genetic predisposition, maybe that food can do different things to your cholesterol panel or something like that or something, but not that that's a good or bad. It's just an is, you know?
Yes, it just is. Yeah.
Yeah. And even as I say that, I'm like, no one food at but one meal has any power for your like cardiovascular health. But, you know, something we talked about while we were chatting before, because, you know, we do that in podcasting, listener. we like to chat before, is the experience you had with gestational diabetes. Tell me what do you... Because I know we talked about it, but I also want you to have the ability to share like what you want to share about that experience with gestational diabetes.
Yeah. So when we were in school, I had this idea that, you know, diabetes was only a person with a larger body. It's only a condition that they get. Like you have to be overweight, you have to have a certain BMI. And so I never considered it something that I would get, you know, diagnosed with. Now, gestational diabetes does not mean I have diabetes for anyone who's listening. It just means I had it during pregnancy, which does also put you at higher risk for having it later in life. I have a lot of diabetes in my family, and I've always been aware of that, but I just assumed I was fine because I've always had a smaller body. Mm-hmm. So when I got diagnosed, I actually, with my daughter 10 years ago, I failed the first diabetes test. Forgot about that. Yeah. So I had to do the 2 4-hour glucose test, I think is what it is, which is, first of all, a miserable experience because I hate needles.
Yes, I've been there.
Horrible. Yeah. So I actually didn't get diagnosed that during that time. But then for my son, which he was born almost seven and a half years ago, I did get diagnosed. And that was shocking for me. I mean, oh my gosh, very shocking. I just could not believe it. And of course, like most women with gestational diabetes, I was blaming myself and thought I had done something wrong. But, you know, now I know better than that. That's not true.
But tell me about that. What have you learned since to not blame yourself?
Well, it really has nothing to do with me. Like, I can manage it.
Yes.
I can, that's but so great. I can't yes. control getting it, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. I was working out almost every day, like in a healthy way. Mm-hmm. At that point, mm-hmm. I had come somewhat far in my intuitive mm-hmm. eating and healthier relationship with exercise and food journey. I wasn't all the way there yet. Not that you're ever are all the way there, but I was still yeah. working through some things. So if you can imagine, getting that diagnosis threw a huge wrench in that, because I was back to counting my carbs, you know, trying to control my blood sugar, constantly recording things, which I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. But for me, it was very triggering.
Of course. I think it would be for many people. Yeah.
Yeah.
If we didn't live in this climate with MyFitnessPal and all the other crappy apps, then, you know, maybe it wouldn't have been as triggering. But yeah.
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 Yeah. I almost kind of like enjoyed it again. Like, oh, this is an excuse to count my carbs while I'm pregnant.
Ooh, you got seduced. Yes.
I know. Yeah. I know.
It like sucked yeah. you back in.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was like an
goodness.
Excuse to diet when I was pregnant. Like, looking back, that is obviously not healthy, a healthy, you know, mm-hmm. mindset to have. It just was. Yeah. And of course I blame myself, because everyone always thinks that diabetes is the person's fault. But now mm-hmm. I know it has a lot to do with the pancreas. It has a lot to do with obviously genetics and just my yeah. body's ability to handle sugar. I couldn't control it. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't something that like you ate something wrong the few weeks leading up to the test that led to this diagnosis. Like, it is mm-hmm. mostly genetic. And, mm-hmm. You know, the type of client that I worked the most with, and I know this is how we met when I was on your podcast, was are people who have PCOS. Mm-hmm. And so many people with PCOS are at higher risk also for gestational diabetes. And I can remember reading in the evidence-based guidelines for diabetes. They come out every 5 years, and there's a section on gestational diabetes. And all over these guidelines, they talk about people needing to lose weight for PCOS, tons of crap on that, even though they have no diet that they have found to recommend. And they say that in there too. But in the gestational diabetes section, they are like, everyone with PCOS is at higher risk. It doesn't matter what size you are, but it's mostly genetic. Mm-hmm. You're just going to be at higher risk for it because of having PCOS. And they said it over and over again, like, it has nothing to do with your body size. It has nothing to do with what you ate. And they were, I got the sense from reading it that they were trying to like convey, like, this is something we should not stigmatize people about. And mm-hmm. I also think it's really important because of like gestational diabetes. So many people are still told to omit carbohydrates completely to manage it, and also to like work on weight loss while they're pregnant. And as dietitians, we know like dieting during the times of like fetal development is something that is like really impactful on the developing fetus there. Like, that's something that can really get in the way of, I don't know, some eyeballs or kidneys developing. So like, yeah. you don't want to actually restrict. And I hate that that's become so normal. But yeah. what do you think about even expanding the conversation to talk about diabetes? Because again, when we were talking before, we both shared that we have similar identities, and we have a similar genetic trajectory. you know, we're both thin white women, and we also both have high genetic incidences for diabetes. Mm-hmm. I've shared on the podcast before, but listener, you may not know this, but I have insulin resistance. If you lined up all the Duffys, my dad's side of the family, they all look like me and they all have diabetes. I think just even naming again that you and I are kind of the proof in a sense that like you can be any body size, you can be in a thinner body and still have a chance of getting diabetes. Tell me what do you think is important for people to keep in mind with just acknowledging that?
Yeah. Well, I think it takes away a lot of the guilt, first of all. I think diabetes is one of those. I think it's one of it. That's what makes it unique, is it's one of those chronic conditions that comes with a lot of guilt. Like, I can't think of any other chronic condition that comes with more guilt than diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it has to do with food, and it is the only that I can think of, the only chronic condition that where you have to think so much about food every day. I mean, I'm not even talking about type 1 diabetes. I'm talking about type 2, but most of people with type 2, they really have to put more thought into what they're eating, mm-hmm. into their and their activity level. So I can't even remember what the question was, but I think what I like to help with people who have diabetes, helping them work through, not everyone comes to me and says, I have guilt about my diabetes. Like, I don't hear that all the time, but I can generally sense it as I'm talking to them. Mm-hmm. So really trying to work on that self-compassion piece. And then honestly, also the facts, like what you just said, this is genetic. You were probably bound to have this, to get this diagnosis at some point in your life. And there wasn't much you could do about it. You can do great things to help control it and to help it from getting worse, but it was probably bound to happen. I even, mm-hmm. After taking mm-hmm. my second blood sugar test, I tried to like outsmart it. So when I was pregnant with my son. Oh yeah. So during I think they take your blood 3 times, I want to say. In between each one, I went around and walked around the clinic, like power walked. To try to theoretically lower my blood sugar, which should work. But there's a couple reasons that's not a good idea. One, that does kind of like mess up the test a little bit. Not smart.
Yeah,
I do
you
not recommend
catch
doing
it.
That.
You want to, yeah. If and your that, blood sugar is high, you want to catch
you
it.
You need to
yeah.
know. Yes. Yes. That's the other thing. Like if it had worked, which it didn't, but if it had and I didn't know I had gestational diabetes, who knows? I mean, I wouldn't have been taking my blood sugar regularly. And then I don't know what would have happened to my son.
Yeah.
Would he have been really large? There could have been other issues. I don't know. But yeah, I think the guilt is the biggest thing that comes to mind with gestational and regular, just the chronic condition, type 2 diabetes.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those conditions when people get diagnosed with, or the threat of the diagnosis will be kind of the seduction into dieting again, if people have been trying to repair that part of their history with food. Yeah, there's 3 conditions that I think that have the most kind of oomph when it comes to like getting people back to dieting. And of course, diabetes or the threat of it is one, PCOS and fatty liver disease. And of course, there are people who have all 3, right?
Yeah.
And they've experienced it each time. And it's really hard, because one of the things with dieting that I don't want to say I give it credit for, but like part of what dieting does is in the short term, it's going to change some of those numbers. You know, it's going to lower blood sugar or lower insulin or help the fatty liver, but that's just the short term. The long term, what we know is that dieting makes all these things worse. So mm-hmm. and gets in the way of you actually living a life where you're not scared all the time. Which I also think is a part of health, right?
Well, right. And think about another thing that – another indicator of – or I guess I should say another I can't even think of words right now, but something else that can cause high blood sugar is anxiety and stress.
Yes.
And you're constantly
– Yeah.
Guilt can increase anxiety and stress. So all of that mm-hmm. comes together, and that's not helping your blood sugar.
Right.
So,
yeah.
It's dieting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the big thing that I'm getting from all of this is that we can live our life in fear of a chronic disease, but it probably won't change the outcome anyway. And so why don't we teach people how to be in the moment and allow food to be an asset instead of this thing to be scared of, and appreciate what we have control over and what we don't, and have compassion when we aren't going in the direction that we were hoping we would go, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I like that. That was good.
Well, with the last few minutes left, what I'm thinking about is, maybe someone who is listening and has a family history of diabetes, and they're hearing what we're saying, and they have kids they take care of, maybe their own or kids in their life that will have the same genetic susceptibility. What do you hope that they get from this conversation?
That's a really good question. I'm currently thinking about my own kids, because this actually, this concern goes through my head often, because as a dietitian who is more on the food freedom and non-restriction side of things, my kids, sometimes I look at what they're eating and it's hard for me to not jump in and be like, no, don't eat that. No, that's bad for you. I mean, I would never say that. But for example, my son this morning had a Pop-Tart and a chocolate chip waffle with syrup. Okay. Yeah, not the most balanced breakfast. And I do think about this, is this setting him up for failure down the road? But I think the moral of the story is, it comes back to control what you can control. My husband has taken over breakfast. I am not going to be a nag about breakfast. I will him.
No.
I put my little, suggestions in there. Oftentimes he listens. Sometimes he doesn't, and that is okay. I control what I can control. I will continue to offer them a variety of foods, a variety of especially fruits and vegetables and lean proteins and whole grains. I will never stop doing that, even if 70% of the time they don't eat it. But that is all I can do. And then also, I'm trying to lead by example. You know, I want them to see what I'm doing, being active, getting outside, enjoying social, a social life, having friends, eating a relatively balanced meals most times. I want them to, even though that might not necessarily do anything, that's what I have control over. And yes. I think it's a good start. So I think control the controllable, kind of like what you said. And that's, as parents, really, really all we can do. And I think that's good enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The thing that I always think about with being a parent and looking at a plate of food or a snack that a kid is having, we're seeing just that moment. And I think it can be really easy, especially if you aren't a dietitian or don't work in the space of intuitive eating or anti-diet work, to be really oh shit, my kid just had sugar at breakfast. I don't know, something like that. And what I always like to keep in mind, and what I like to reassure myself in my own parenting, and I think I'm offering it to you as well, if you want it, is we can help our kids in the moment to have that balanced plate or more fruits and vegetables or more proteins or something like that with a meal. We can do that for right now, but is that going to help in the long term? And I know you and I both see our clients that we're working with who had parents who controlled everything that they were eating, we probably wouldn't describe their eating now as adults as healthy. Right. There's probably a lot of shame with eating, either lots of fear with food or eating food in secret because there's so much shame with it. And so I think the thing to kind of weigh is do I want my kid to have this picture of healthy eating, however I would describe it now, or do I want them to have that as a grown up? And I think modeling is one thing that we can really do, is modeling just the whole picture of what variety and moderation and balance, what that looks like, and not being afraid of food, is going to set kids up for as much as they can, like we said earlier, from as much as they can to have a relationship with food that includes, you know, all the things that, yeah, you know, are going to be options for them. So mm-hmm. as I say this to you, just know I'm saying it to myself too. Cause like we're all yeah. living in the same shitty climate when it comes to food.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. Modeling is the biggest thing that I think about. And then I will say, like, this morning, I am someone who will offer my kids, like, there was a banana. Mm-hmm. Do you want, would you like to have a banana with this meal? And generally my son, for example, would say, no, I don't want a banana. And I'm not going to force it because I don't want him to hate bananas. But you're exactly right. I do sometimes think about, like, my clients who had pushy, fear-mongering parents, and it rarely did that help. So it's kind of good validation for what I'm doing. But he went to school, hopped up on sugar today, and okay.
He probably felt fine. I mean, that's the other thing too with kids. Like, the way our body just uses energy is different when we're young, and it doesn't feel like sluggish afterwards. It just right. doesn't. So,
and I actually looked at the nutrition facts, of the Pop-Tart. I'm like, curious, how many grams of protein are in this? How many grams of protein do you think are in a Pop-Tart?
I don't know. 2 grams or something?
Yeah, is it 2.5?
Is that right? Oh my god! Yeah. It's kind of scary how sometimes we as dietitians know all this information.
I know.
That I don't want really all impressive. This in my head.
I know. I guessed 4. I was a little off, but it was 2.5. So okay,
there you go. I mean, and I do think protein is one of the ones in our culture that like is heralded as like, as long as you have protein, it's fine. And it's like,
I know.
I mean,
well, I will say he takes a medicine in the morning that it says yes. take with protein. So I am very, but I still
yes,
let it go.
I have one of those too. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I'm like, have a glass of milk and then I'll give you some protein then. That's what I do with mine in the morning.
I know. Milk is a great cure for that. Yeah. Easy.
Yes, it is. It is. It's an easy way. So, oh my goodness. Well, I appreciate this conversation so much. Tell me the name of your podcast. So I'm picturing another parent who's like, oh, I want to hear more what Gina has to say. What's the name of your podcast?
It's called Nutrition Unmeasured.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. I love it. And if someone wants to find out more about you, where can they find you?
Sure. Well, I also have a website, nutritionunmeasured.com. I do. Mm-hmm. I take clients there, not through insurance, but I actually work for another company where I take clients with insurance. So I am taking new clients right now. I'd love to hear from anyone who wants to meet with me for one-on-one, because I know you don't do one-on-one coaching anymore, Julie. So I would love to see anyone who would like to see me. So maybe I can give you my email address for that. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I want to put it in show notes or anything, but you can reach out to me via my website, nutritionunmeasured.com. Yeah.
That works. That works great. And I will put that in the show notes too. Thank you so much, Gina, for your time. I appreciate it. So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Gina Forster, all about living in fear of food and diabetes and all the complicated bits that come with that. I do see that food has written back. So before we get to food's letter, I hope you enjoyed this episode and hit subscribe or follow. I really enjoy making these episodes for you. So I want to make sure that they can find you when it's time for a new episode to come out. And if you haven't done so yet, leaving us a rating or review or commenting on YouTube is also a great way for more people to find us. So thank you in advance for supporting the Find Your Food Voice independent podcast. All right. Like I said, food has written back. But before we go, I want to say I will see you next week, or I will be in your ears next week. And until then, take care. Dear Gina, thank you for fighting to help people understand how diabetes isn't their fault. Getting diabetes is still mostly genetic, and any person of any size can experience it. Teaching your children and reminding yourself that having a kind, compassionate relationship with food, along with teaching body diversity, helps lower blood sugar and increase safety for everyone. We are grateful you no longer fear us and instead work on what really needs to be fixed, our dieting world. Keep going. It is making a difference. Love, food.
at Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.